The last comment I'd have, though, which is a bit of a concern, is how the movie was filmed and where it was filmed. I think it finally puts to rest the moon landing conspiracy, because they must have used the same soundstage, because I don't know how they got it as perfect as they did. Other than they were on the same soundstage that what the moon was, because since they're not filming on the moon, how do you replicate it?
Right.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello, Ted. It's episode 85, and we are down to testosterone this week. There's no women.
I still have some estrogen, I think.
Yeah, you had it for breakfast? A little sprinkle? Supplementing with estrogen?
That's right.
There you go. So how was your week?
Had a fun week. Spent the weekend up by your way, up in Santa Barbara with some friends.
Cool.
Just chilled at the beach. It was cool, very low-key weekend. How about you?
So cool as in cool entertainment time or cool weather?
Cool weather.
Yeah.
It was much cooler than down here. I think here in LA in the valley was 100, and up there it was, I don't know, in the just below 80. And we were on the beach and the water was a little chilly, but I still got in there for a good stretch.
Wow. Yeah, I rode to Halama Beach yesterday. When I got to the beach, it was probably like mid-60s.
Wow.
So it was pretty chilly. You know, you kind of come over the hill and you're sweating because you're going up the climb, and then you come down into the beach and you're just like, woo, chilly. Yeah, week was good. Probably the highlight of the week was adding rubber flooring to the home gym.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, we had like leftover carpet when we carpeted the bedrooms 8-9 years ago, whatever. So, you know, like the edges start fraying, it gets matted down, it gets stained with whatever's going on over all that time in the garage.
Yeah.
It was just getting kind of nasty, and it was, you know, we needed some new stuff. So, bit the bullet. Wasn't terribly expensive. Got them at Home Depot. It's like this rubber flooring, like with the interlocking pieces.
Oh yeah.
And I'll tell you though, it is super comfortable to walk on. And like if you're doing squats or something, I do them barefoot. I feel more stable barefoot than if I'm wearing like, you know, any kind of shoe on those things. So yeah, they are really comfortable, really cool. And I don't have to worry about cracking the concrete now the way I did with the rug.
Well, don't get overly, you know, confident and start slamming that stuff down.
Well, it's not like I'm deadlifting 500 pounds. I'm a skinny bike rider, you know. I can't do all that. All right. So cool. Yeah, other than that, it was a quiet week. Watched a few things we can get to later, I guess. But why don't we jump into our beer?
Okay.
And then from there, we could get into a couple trailers.
Sounds good.
What do you have this week?
I have a Golden Road Wolf Among Weeds IPA.
Wolf Among Weeds.
Wolf Among Weeds IPA.
Is there like some sort of a metaphor behind Wolf Among Weeds?
I don't know. They have the whole Wolf line, Wolf Pup. And then this is Wolf Among Weeds. I don't know anything about it. It's nice. It's a nice, I bought a little six pack of this because I was going to a party and I was trying to offload my, pineapple cart and my mango cart, the two wheat beers that I don't like that are Golden Road. And I didn't want to just bring just those two. So I brought those two and a new six pack of Wolf Among Weeds so that I could drink something while other people are trying to drink my leftover wheat beer. Beers.
There you go. Saving them for the company. Be like, yeah. Oh, I have this great beer. You're going to love it. You know, and as you turn it over, you're just like, oh, I'm so happy
God
I'm drinking
it's going down. Out the door.
Exactly. Wow. I saw even splash come out of that one. Keep the electronics away.
It went straight to my keyboard.
All right. So this week, I have a Dogfish Head.
Oh, nice.
Saw this one in the liquor store. American Beauty, Pale Ale, 6.5 ABV. It's Dogfish Head and the Grateful Dead present American Beauty.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So it is made with granola and honey. Yeah, it's just a 12-ouncer, but yeah, it's, and I even get to drink it out of a Dogfish Head glass for once.
I think your hair is growing as we speak.
Yeah.
You're becoming a hippie in front of my eyes.
Dude, Clarice is going to walk in the room and say, did you just have patchouli? Yeah, it's like the Hemperor, but it's like the Hemperor with patchouli, right? So, Ted, you shared with me over the week Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes.
What say you?
I don't know. The only thing I take away from the trailer is, and I know people, all the real Lucas fans, all the real Star Wars fans are saying it'll never happen. But I would love for this saga, this trilogy to end with Rey going to the dark side. I just, you know, I know the trailer ends like that, and it's kind of like it's kind of a red herring, and we kind of, everyone says it's a red herring, but I just think that to balance the force, she has to go to the dark side, you know, or something along those lines. I think it would be an incredible twist for the franchise, a great way to end the trilogy.
Well, balance the force with Kylo Ren or something? Or what do you mean balance the force?
You know, it's a big thing about the force and being balanced between good and evil.
Right.
And that's why there's always a couple of Sith Lords and a couple of Jedi that attain this heightened level of seniority. So I like the idea of her defeating Kylo Ren and then having to take on his mantle as the evil. I don't know. I don't know how they would do it. I don't know how J.J. Abrams would do it. But I like, you know, everyone says it's going to be a dream. Everyone says it's going to be like she isn't going to go there, isn't going to do that. But I think it would be a wonderful twist if she actually did. And she's a rogue character, you know. It's like it's unsure how she's going to evolve.
So is that her at the end with the new lightsaber?
With that double lightsaber that flips out?
Yeah.
Like a switchblade?
Yeah.
Yes, that's her.
Okay. I thought so. It looked a little bit, maybe it was the coloring or something, but I have a few comments about what you just said.
Okay.
With regard to that. I did no reading on fanboy pages or anything.
Right.
So I kind of wanted to approach it fresh with my own perspective.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing is, it seems as though, like, with every new Star Wars as of late, they have to have, like, the new paradigm is, here's a new Star Wars, and now we have a new lightsaber to go with the new movie. Right? Every new movie has some new lightsaber. Like, Kylo Ren's was, I think, the last one, and now we have this double, yeah, like you said, switchblade kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And right before that scene in this trailer, you hear the Darth Vader breath.
Mm-hmm.
Leads right into what you're saying. And then why does she have a red kind of fiery, like a Kylo Ren style lightsaber? And she's wearing some robes that she doesn't typically wear.
Right.
You know, and I was thinking along the same lines, like maybe she does go to the dark side and this is like a new twist. Because, I mean, let's assume if you didn't have 4, 5, and 6 being the actual 1, 2, and 3,
mm-hmm.
and the end of 3, which was Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
So let's assume it started with 1, 2, you know, Phantom Menace and Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith. At the end of Revenge of the Sith, I mean, the main character essentially of the first three movies turns to the dark side.
Right.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It was about his, well, I don't want to say awakening, but his coming to be, how he came to be as Darth Vader. Nobody said they can't do the same thing with Rey.
Right.
Yeah.
And the prequel trilogy is definitely a coming of age trilogy of Darth Vader.
Exactly. And the other thing I thought too was Darth Vader came to be after the battle with Obi-Wan and the fiery planet. And now you have Rey fighting Kylo Ren on the watery planet. So like if you start looking at the elements and so on, you know, so it's like a very similar kind. I mean, she's not turning into, well, we don't know this, but she's not turning into like, I don't know. I don't want to say cyborg, but you know, as Darth Vader had his life support suit.
Ah.
So, but like, I don't see her burning up and needing life support, but you never know. I mean, she drowns and he burns, she drowns. Next thing you know, she needs like breathing.
Even Luke had an arm that was replaced. So, you know, there's always room for some partially cybernetic body part.
Right. And I would say the thing I disliked most about the trailer, like, I get the Rise of Skywalker, and when they show Luke in the first few seconds, I'm thinking, okay, this is cool. I see how they're going to connect it. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's like Billy Dee, and they're showing all the people and all the different scenes. And, you know, I'm just like, well, what does it have to do? You know, the AT-ATs walking and, you know, all this stuff. And it's like, how about we just get to why it's the Rise of Skywalker and, like, stop trying to summarize the past, I don't know, like, 19 movies.
Yes, I think that that's all part of where it was coming from. It was part of a bigger release, so it had to set the stage for how they're going to end this set of three trilogies.
Yeah.
So while the universe continues, I think this is supposedly the end of this lineage of Skywalker. We spent 9 movies talking about the Skywalker family. Anakin Skywalker, Luke Skywalker, and now supposedly we are going to get a reveal of, you know, Rey Skywalker. So I think this is their way of paying, you know, just that instead of a trailer to trailer, they do a little of just like setting the table.
Like paying homage to the...
Exactly.
Yeah, spending a minute doing that.
Just doing the other trilogies.
And I think the VO, when he says your journey nears the end, that's kind of like a prelude to this being the last of that lineage of that series of Star Wars movies before they move on to like the next phase.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, it took them 30 years to get there, unlike Marvel, you know.
What do you think about that time, that gap, though, those gaps? Do you like that better, to have the anticipation and building into it?
Which gaps? I mean, are you talking...
The gaps over the overall of the three trilogies that we have now of the Skywalker sagas.
So you're not including, like, the Solo movie and all that stuff?
I would take Solo and Rogue One out of it, just to say, like, those are storylines that feed into and around this main saga, and that's why I called it, like, the Skywalker saga, because... This there's a one family lineage in these 9 movies that are the main three trilogies. So I think, you know, the first ones obviously came out, they had no concept of the franchise that they were going to become. But then when that prequel trilogy came out, they knew what they were doing. They were, you know, there's a bit of a cashing in, and people kind of felt disingenuous, you know, they felt they were disingenuous to the fact that that's all that he was doing when he was doing that. But now looking back on it, like you said, it's a coming of age movie for Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader, one and the same. But, you know, now it feels like they're doing this pace of every Christmas there's a Star Wars movie, and you know that it's going to tie in with Christmas. Are you looking, does that appeal to you, or do we need a break?
I think my biggest fear is that over time, people are going to become accustomed to a Star Wars movie every year. And there was a point they were doing like a December and a May release.
Yeah, so with the Rogue Ones and with the Solo movie, they did definitely add it in 2 Star Wars movies a year. So
yeah, I mean, my biggest concern with that is they're going to start watering down the stories. And I don't know, I think with scarcity sometimes comes the things that you enjoy most.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's what makes the original trilogy, or, you know, the original 2.5. I think it's what makes those so much better, is because you finally caught up.
No, what is the 2.5? What do you mean 2.5?
You know, once you get to the Ewoks, I mean, the movie kind of is like...
Oh, I love the Ewoks. I love the Ewoks. What do you
want? Oh, man, this guy. No, but I mean, once you, like, that original trilogy, I think one of the reasons, at least to me, and maybe because I was so young when it came out too, it's more embedded in me. Like, you know how it is, like, the music that you listened to from your 20s to your 30s is like the music you listen to for like the rest of your life. And anything new is like, you know, that newfangled music that the kids today are listening to that you just hate, you know?
No way to feel older than to listen to your children's music and hate it.
Oh, for sure. But I think maybe movies might fall into that too.
Yes.
So then later in the 90s, when the second trilogy came out, and then now when they come out, I'm not saying I don't like them and I'm not a fan or whatever. But what I'm saying though is I think I'm more partial to the original ones because it was probably where I was. It was right in my wheelhouse as a kid. But also I think the scarcity made me like hold on to it tighter.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you just start pumping them out one after another, sure. I mean, it's the box office is going to go haywire. They're going to make a lot of money. In today's world, people want to make a lot of money, it seems. And maybe the technology. Well, you know what I mean, though. Like,
yes.
It's not about doing something amazing. Sometimes it's about just pumping out content.
Mm-hmm.
But they can pump out the content, and maybe because of technology and stuff, they can pump it out faster than ever before. You don't have to have model builders building a Death Star that takes a year and a half just to build the Death Star or something. But I don't know. I think there's something to be said for a slower paced release that keeps the anticipation and the fanboys. Like, you see the videos when the Phantom Menace came out, whatever you, I mean, I couldn't stand the movie, but whatever you think about it, they're like kissing the ground as they walk into the theater because it's been so long. You know what I mean?
You're right. Right.
I don't think you get that anymore because there's just the releases are coming like, you know, Fast and Furious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think if they slowed it down, you would have a better anticipation of the fanboy culture.
Right. And maybe you'd have a little more respect for the content if it were less, if there was just less of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like, if you look at these movies and sci-fi and what they're about and like where they came from and Lucas's vision early, they were like space westerns that were very simple in their story, really. The original one was very simple.
Yes.
I mean, just the damsel in distress, the good guys in white.
Farm boy, yeah.
Yeah, farm boy in white, the bad guys in black. You had the comic relief, you know, with the robots and stuff. It was brilliant in its simplicity. And I think my biggest fear is that they're just going to turn into like, well, in this case, winter, I guess, but winter explosion movie blockbusters that people go see and they lose sight of the story. It's like when The Phantom Menace came out, it was more about putting as much crap on the screen as possible than it was about telling a story. And, you know, and I don't know if you ever saw that review that I sent you. So Red Letter Media is the review. So it's Mr. Plinkett Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace review. The only downside is it was done when YouTube only allowed 7-minute videos.
Mm-hmm.
So he has like 10 7-minute videos or whatever. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, it is the number one best review.
Oh, yes, yes. I did see this. I did watch this.
The guy has the goofy voice.
I watched this when you said it to me the first time.
Oh, it is like so amazing because he really gets, it's almost like film school 101 about what makes for a good movie and then why The Phantom Menace is such a bad movie and why Star Wars is such a good movie. Yeah, it's just brilliant. But anyway, you know, to end my monologue, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, I'm going to go see it, obviously. I think it's going to be good. I don't know what it's going to end like we were talking. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just another release of a Star Wars story.
So, you know, before we get to Christmas, before we get to The Rise of Skywalker, we have another Star Wars property that will be hitting our house in November.
Disney Plus.
We have Disney Plus and the Mandalorian.
Can I back up really quick, though?
Yes.
One thing I wondered, and I'll leave this to you to answer, and then we can jump into Mandalorian and Disney Plus. So what is your opinion about why they release it around the Christmas timeline and not the Thanksgiving timeline when you can look at the merch that Star Wars generates for Christmas gifts?
I think because even if you release the movie in Christmas, you can have your toys come out on Black Monday or Black Friday or...
Oh, like a pre-release of the toys that anticipate the movie.
The toys can come out ahead of the release of the movie. And I think, you know, the true toy market for Christmas and children is better tied to the Disney animated features, which kind of rule the Thanksgiving holiday. It's the Frozens of the world, the, you know, the Wreck-It Ralphs. That toy positioning, I think, as far as consumer products, is a better, it's a more lucrative sell than the Star Wars toys. I mean, the Star Wars toys are perennial. They're going to make money year round.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to sell toys to kids, the kids' toy sale will do better if it's a Pixar, Disney animated release that's for all ages.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, and then maybe it anticipates for the more people to go to the theater then instead of wait for streaming or something.
Right.
So Mandalorian, I'm watching the trailer as we're recording this.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen it yet. This is the first see. So oh, it's no. First see.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I didn't know to see it.
Oh, I thought you saw it. I said Mandalorian, I thought.
Maybe I missed there somewhere. So is this a series?
So Mandalorian will be a series on Disney Plus from day one of Disney Plus release, the November 12th day. We're super excited. Do you want to take a minute and watch it?
No, I'm done with it.
Okay.
Oh, man, that guy gets himself cut in half when the door shuts. How many episodes is this going to be?
So we don't know how many episodes it's going to be, but it's definitely going to be,
okay,
you know, probably around the 8 to 10 episode realm. And it's going to be released every week. It's going to be a weekly. And we'll see how it does. I know people were talking about wanting to be able to binge the whole season on day one of Disney Plus, but Disney Plus is going to have so much to offer on day one that I don't think you would want to binge it that way. I think you'd want to do one day at a time.
What better way to get as many people as possible to get into your, what is it, $6.99 a month streaming service than to have a Star Wars series that's so well done? And so I don't know where it's going to fall, if it even does fall into a storyline somewhere.
It does. It falls into the storyline. It's post episode 6. So it's after,
okay,
Return of the Jedi, but it's at the beginning of the First Order.
Got ya.
So it's roughly in that space.
So the main thing that I would say is, and this dabbles into what we're watching, but we'll get to that at the end. Right now we're finishing up, but we're watching a bunch of stuff on HBO, and like HBO really kicks ass in a lot of ways for what they have to offer.
Right.
Though it's $15 a month. Come November, our plan is turning off HBO at $15 a month, because we'll want to have seen the shows that we've been waiting to see in various movies or whatever, and then picking up Disney Plus because of the library that's there.
Right.
And I just love how they have the ticker going, like 70 days, 14 hours, 47 minutes, 14,
13 seconds. Yep.
Yeah. It just keeps going, right? And I think that's cool because it gives you, I mean, when things come out, like there's a sense of anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
Like we know Christmas is coming every single year.
Yep.
And you know, like when do people start, like how many shopping days until Christmas? You know, they start the countdown, you know? And then like the day after Christmas, it's like 364 days left to Christmas, you know, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the countdown I think is brilliant. That's the first thing you see is the countdown, and you're like, it right away says, oh my god, I gotta get this when it comes out. You don't even know what it is. You're just like, I gotta get it.
So 70 days, I gotta be there.
If that was your idea, Ted, I love it.
It is not my idea, but I definitely buy into it. I'm right there with you. But I will say that they are tackling the pricing model with a ferociousness that I have not seen before. You know, like the price point at $6.99.
Explain. What do you mean they're tackling? Let me ask it this way. What do you mean ferociousness?
Oh, well, just like undercutting the competition of streaming services.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Disney, you know, and once again, I do not speak for Disney, but Disney is not, they don't care how much money they're going to make from this. The $6.99 is not going to make or break Disney's bank on how many eyeballs they're going to get to see this content. They're just trying to compete in this overly saturated streaming market. You know, you have some differentiation with Amazon Prime because you get the Amazon Prime delivery. But like you said, HBO, Netflix, their only offering is this streaming service of the things that they offer. And like you said, we're out of this contract space where you can, you know, say sign up for a contract and be locked into a place for an extended period of time. But I will say Disney is doing something where they are not giving employee discounts across the board, but they are giving you that annual discount, right? Where you can buy the whole year.
Right.
And you get a discount of whatever it is. You get a month or 2 months for free. There's an additional discount because this question comes up so often about like, well, how can we actually, you know, why aren't we getting this for free? And even my kids were like upset that we were getting it for free. And I was like, no, we don't, you know, it's such a low price point. We got to pitch in and help, you know, but D23 offered a deeper discount. Where if you sign up for 3 years, you get it at $140. So I was looking around.
Is that for anybody?
Well, D23 members are allowed to do it, but the D23.
What's a D23 member?
It's D23, Disney 23. D23 is the name of the expo that they do every year. They just had it a couple weeks ago. It's where Mandalorian was premiered. It's where a bunch of these trailers were premiered last weekend. And this membership for D23 is free. So Anne had signed up years ago for D23. So while we were talking about it, I was like, so if you're a D23 member, you can get it 3 years for $140. And Anne was like, I'm a member, sign up with my thing. So literally while we were starting our podcast this evening, I signed up, I logged in, I took the initiative, I had my credit card out, and I bought 3 years of Disney Plus. At $140.
Hold on. Let me do the math.
Do the math.
Quick. So we're talking, you said 140?
Uh-huh.
Divided by, so wait, 3 years?
3 years.
Okay, divided by 36. So it's $389 month.
A month. There you go.
So it's half price almost.
Almost half price.
Wow. That is a good deal.
But then they've locked you in. It's like a contractless lock-in.
Let me ask this then.
Uh-huh.
Netflix has what they license because, well, they do their own content and they do what they license.
Right.
HBO has their own content. They do what they license. And same with Amazon. Is Disney strictly doing their own properties or are they going to license third-party studios and things to be on there?
It doesn't look like they're going to license anything.
So strictly their properties that they have.
The only thing they will license, and it's license I use in a very air quote loose term, are properties that they own. You know what I mean?
Because that's what I mean, yeah.
And internally, there will be some, you know, some shifting of funds, you know, internally, I'm sure you'll have to, you know, move some dollars from this, you know, this budget line to this budget line. But yeah, between kids programming coming from Disney channels, from Pixar releases, Marvel releases, Star Wars releases, Nat Geo releases, they will all fall under Disney Plus.
So will this do away with the vault, like the quote unquote air quote vault? You know, remember Snow White comes out. Oh, get Snow White while everybody rushes to like Target to buy the DVD.
Right.
Because it's going to go back in the vault in 6 months.
I think the vault had been replaced with technological advances. So every, you know, 10 years or so, there's a new technological advance like 3D at home entertainment, you know? So then there was a new 3D release of all the classics, you know?
Yeah.
And then 4K. Now we've gone back to the film and we made 4K masters of everything. So quick on the tail of 4K will be 8K, I'm sure. And, you know, and so on and so forth. So I think what was used as a marketing and sales positioning of it's going to go back in the vault and you can't see it again is now going to say, see it in a way that you've never seen it before. We've done this to this feature that you know and love, but you've never seen it quite like this because we've never had the technological advances to display something quite like this.
Yeah, I mean, the 4K, 8K, I mean, I'm getting to the point in life where my eyes see like 240.
And then on top of that, I think the live action and the computer generated, you know, effects of like the Lion King re-envisioning and Aladdin, that is another form of taking IP, you know, intellectual property that you own and just revamping it in a way that's for a new audience. And you're not necessarily pulling something out of the vault, but you're creating something anew out of stories that are yours outright.
Yeah, I got you. My last question with Disney, how are the unlimited downloads going to work? If you could speak to that. I mean,
I don't know.
In other words, it says download your favorites to watch where you want, when you want. Do I download them to my phone, my tablet, my computer, and then I take it on vacation with me and I could download everything? And then like, when is it tied to my account? So it has to verify it. So if ever I cancel my membership, then they just like zap it off my computer. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, I'm sure that seems like the logical way. I have no knowledge of how they would do it, but yeah.
There has to be some sort of like how iTunes works. You're going to go to stream a movie you own, but you have to be logged into iTunes before. Like, it is on your computer.
Right.
You could take it where you want, but it needs to verify. So in other words, well, what if I'm on an airplane and I don't have internet connection? How does it verify unless right. my computer? I don't know. That's so bizarre, but I think it's cool.
Well, I think Amazon Music does the same thing where you can do Amazon Music offline, and I do Amazon Music offline pretty regularly because I like listening to Amazon Music in my car and I don't like paying for the data charges. So
yeah.
When I do that, when I do offline Amazon Music, then it will store it locally and you'll have it on your phone, on your device, and then it plays it out. And I don't think it checks but once a month. I think I do remember like leaving it on this offline mode for a really long time. And then like either the first day of the month or after 30 days of having it in this mode, it says you just need to turn it online just to revalidate your account. And then you could turn it back to offline.
So it downloads it to your device?
Yeah.
It downloads like a few thousand songs to your device or something? Or how does it?
I have all this. Yeah, I have all the songs that I want to listen to offline in a space that's compartmentalized within the user space of that app.
Sure. Okay, I got
it. So then the app is the gatekeeper, and the app has a clock on it, and whatever the clock is, whether it's the first of the month or 30 days, it says, well, you need to check in once a month just to verify that you still have access to this service.
Yeah, that you're still a Prime member and you didn't like get all our music and cancel.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I got you.
And then, you know, basically if you cancel and you get somebody to do that for give you a month for free, at the end of the month there, you know, it's all wiped out. So I think you do something along the lines of that model. I think that's the most logical way to do it. I don't know how technically Disney's going to do it.
I think the moral of the story is become a D23 member and get Disney Plus for $3.89 a month for 3 years. I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer. I mean, $3.89 a month, it's almost like, I mean, talk about a loss leader.
Well, I mean, I don't, there are rumors that The Mandalorian is costing upwards of over $1 million an episode. So
no wonder the park is $140 to get into, right? So,
no comment.
Yeah.
But Mandalorian on day one, we're going to watch that first episode that I just spent $140 for the 3 years. I'm going to, you know, I basically for that month, I've spent $4. So if I only watch The Mandalorian every week, that means that I've spent $1 an episode viewing it, something that might have cost upwards of over $1 million an episode. So Disney spent $4 million to make it. I spent $4 to just view it, if that was the only thing I'm watching on Disney Plus.
Well, and it's, an hour, like 50 minutes, an hour, something like that?
Something like that, I'm sure, yeah.
So figure, if you think about a movie being 2 hours, so like two episodes are costing you like, you know, $2 if that's the only thing you're watching, right? So instead of going to the movie for like $30 for the four of you or whatever it costs.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. At least
$30 on Tuesday. Yes.
Well, that's true. You go that. Well, yeah, you're talking what? $13. So, I mean, yeah, you're talking north of $50 to go to the movies for four people.
Yeah. On a Friday night, it's $60. Yeah.
You know, on a set. Yeah. $60. So that same like if you binged two episodes, I mean, it's costing you $2 so you're saving yourself $58 if you think about it that way. Yeah. It's all in how you justify
it. It's all framing of how to justify it to the wife.
Well, that's why when people ask how much the Urban Arrow is, and they say, well, with the rain cover and everything, it's $7,000. And they say, wow, that's an expensive bike. And I say, or is it inexpensive transportation?
Yes.
It's all in how you frame it, right? All right, the world. Well, that's the world according to Jim with his bicycle. How about the world according to Jeff Goldblum?
This is the most. So I had anticipated wanting and knowing that I would love The Mandalorian. But as far as the things that I was surprised and delighted by, the world according to Jeff Goldblum was the most surprising and most delightful of all the trailers that I've seen in the past month, and definitely from a streaming service.
Okay, we'll hold it right there.
Yeah.
That Grateful Dead beer was so good as a pale ale that I need to get my hair even longer.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have one more of those things. I think that's my first question. I like Jeff Goldblum as an actor.
Yes.
But do you think people are going to care enough where he can carry a show that people are going to buy into to watch him do silly things like all the places he visits around the country or world, wherever he goes?
Well, I mean, he's an interesting guy. He's doing interesting things. He was initially going to do this on a niche platform that was going to live somewhere on Nat Geo, somewhere buried on some streaming service like Curiosity Stream or something like that, you know, that was going to compete with Discovery Networks. But it just got raised into this space where the whole Fox Disney deal made it so much more impactful. It offers Disney Plus owners and users and viewers so much more to grow that audience. And we just spent how long talking about the millions of dollars that they're spending to get me to subscribe for $4 a month. But if somebody was into something as niche as Jeff Goldblum, and that's all they cared about, they might spend $4 a month just to watch Jeff Goldblum. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's...
Wow. I mean, yeah, I was going to say, like, I'm surprised. Maybe I'm not surprised. Like, that's shocking that someone would be such a fan of Jeff Goldblum that he's going to carry a whole platform. And then, you know, maybe, like, okay, I'll subscribe because of Jeff Goldblum. Maybe I'll get into Marvel. Like, really? Maybe, he's the draw?
Maybe I'll watch Free Solo because it'll be there too.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Goldblum is the draw. Although, you know, the cool thing, though, is that, I mean, obviously Disney Plus has a ton of stuff. And, like, I mean, when you look at Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars, I mean, some of the hugest franchises in movies. And then they just throw in Nat Geo. Like, that's so cool, though, because, like, Nat Geo has, like, some really, I mean, obviously they're a storied magazine.
Right.
That goes way back. I mean, I remember being a kid and, you know, like you'd look at, like, I don't know, indigenous women with no shirts on and you're like, oh my God, they got boobs, you know? And like that was like your Playboy back in the day.
there were two magazines that my parents subscribed to, and they were both in leather bound containers in the study. And one of them was Nat Geo with each, you know, leather bound. Every 6 months they had their leather bound, you know, 1979, you know, January.
Oh, for sure.
Through whatever. And then the other one was Playboy. So we literally had Playboys, you know, for the interviews, because those interviews were phenomenal back in the day.
You know, it's hilarious, though. I know you're joking, but they really did have good journalism. I read any of it, but
no, I actually have books now in my house that are Playboy interviews, and it's just the articles.
I was gonna say sans women, right?
No, it has no pictures in it at all.
That's not what
even,
I mean. Yeah,
not even cartoons, but it has like a collection of the top 20 interviews from, you know, Playboy articles. So it's amazing. They did.
No, you're like, hey, Bryce, you want to check out Playboy? And then you give it to him. He's like, Dad, is this a joke?
Yes, it's a joke. It's a heavy-handed joke.
That's hilarious. You know, and then my father-in-law has, I mean, he has stacks and stacks and stacks of Nat Geo magazines all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the coolest thing when it comes to Nat Geo, more the magazine than the channel.
Right.
But my friends Matt and Nancy have been in Nat Geo 3, maybe 4 times because they're professional cavers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they've traveled the world to Papua New Guinea, to Oman, and they've been other places. And doing these like caving type expeditions that they've led and that they're a part of. And they bring the Nat Geo people, the photographers, the journalists, and everybody into these caving environments. And they're like the leads and the know-how to get them down into the caverns and all this stuff. So it's pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they photographers as well? Do they take a lot of pictures?
Oh, amateur. I mean, they do take pictures when they go, but I mean, they're more just for themselves. And more or less, there's like 2 caving teams in the world, you know, just to give a brief background.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 2 main caving teams in the world. So if somebody in, like, they do a lot of stuff in Guatemala, for example, because there's so many caves in Guatemala. And more or less what they do, when I say a professional caver, more or less what they do is they map caves.
Mm-hmm.
So they go down into them and they map where they go underground. So then when you overlay the cave map.
The map, yeah.
Yeah. You can see where, when you're above ground, where the caves are running, I guess.
Were they consulted when the kids were caught in Thailand?
It's a good question. I don't know that.
Oh, you should check. You should ask them.
My guess is probably not, because that was more like, how do you do a rescue? Not necessarily how do you do a caving expedition.
Well, I guess the only reason they would be if they had been in those caves and if they had like known anything about those caves. But yeah, if they hadn't, then you're right. It's just plain old rescue.
But anyway, so what I was getting at, though, so there's like 2 teams.
Uh-huh.
There's an American team and a German team.
Ooh.
And whenever a new cave entrance is found somewhere in the world and word gets out like, hey, there's a new cave somebody found, it's like a competition in a sense, like who's getting to the cave first to be the ones to map it, right? So like if you can map it, then your name's in it and that's just adds to your notoriety as a caver. So there's like I said, there's like, and I mean, it's a friendly, they know each other. It's not like,
have they met? I was about to say, have they met? Do they know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And they've done things together and stuff, but yeah, but there's like, I don't know, a half dozen people on each team or something, but they've had people, they do like cave dives,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you go in with a couple of like, say 3 tanks of air. And the first tank, when that's done, the next 2 tanks are what you use to get back, you know, because like, you don't want to be, because there's no way to go up.
Right.
The only way to go up is to either make it to the other side or go back. But yeah, they've had like caving friends pass away, like drown or in accidents. I mean, it's pretty dangerous too. I mean, it's pretty intense, but.
So is all caving with water? You have to be like scuba experts?
You know, that's a good question. Like my friend Matt, you know, he's an awesome climber. And well, I mean, his wife too, but
yeah.
I mean, he's an awesome climber, you know? And I mean, the guy can rig like any kind of a rope and all this stuff. And I mean, he does all kinds of amazing things, but yeah, anyway, just a little Nat Geo sidebar there.
But this is so what I was going to say before, when you talk about these big tent poles and you talk about all the, you know, all the big offerings from Disney Plus, it's kind of like looking at tile or like a patchwork of a quilt or something. You see the big tile pieces and you know that those are the things that are going to draw people. But there's this grout, there's this, you know, connectivity, there's the edges of things. And that's where Nat Geo is going to live, and Nat Geo is going to fill in the spaces of family entertainment, you know? Like, when you watch...
Man, I love that metaphor. Did you make that up just now?
Just now, just thinking about it. Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome.
So it was like when we watched Mandalorian, we watched the trailer as a family. And it's dark, you know, and I was like, and I said to Bryce, I said, we're probably gonna have to watch this. It comes out on a Tuesday. So, you know, the kids don't watch TV from Monday through Thursday. They only watch TV on the weekends.
Yeah, I love that.
So they know that they're not going to watch it till the weekend anyway. So Ann and I will have a chance to pre-watch it and we'll be able to watch it again on Friday or Saturday. But I said, I don't even know if this is going to be age appropriate for you, Bryce. You know, it might be too violent, too gory, too scary, you know, all of the above. And he was kind of bummed by that. And I'm on the fence. I think he could probably watch Mandalorian and, we could kind of get through it. But then when we watched the Jeff Goldblum trailer, I was like, oh, here's something for the whole family. And this is, and it's Nat Geo, but it just feels like it has some DNA, some Disney DNA in it, where Jeff Goldblum, if he curses, he'll curse the way we curse. If he, if he says anything off color, it will be, in this lighthearted fashion. So
sure,
there's nothing scary or worrisome about watching this with the family. And I think that is the brand positioning of Disney property. And I think you have to push the limits when you're talking about Star Wars and Marvel. You have to say that this is edgy enough to be called Star Wars and Marvel, but maybe Nat Geo and Pixar and Disney titles can be that family-friendly, safe place.
So did you ever watch any of Anthony Bourdain, like with his food and travel shows and all that stuff?
I did. I watched a little bit of it. I was not the biggest Anthony Bourdain fan. He was a little too rough around the edges for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that exact sentiment. This, with the Jeff Goldblum, like where he's going around doing various things, not necessarily with food and travel, but It's kind of Anthony Bourdain-esque.
Yes.
Very much more lighthearted.
Yes.
So going to what you were saying with like, he'll swear how we swear, right? Yeah. I would say my last comment, moving a little bit away from Jeff Goldblum, I don't have a lot to say about this other than I think you said it best. It's going to live in the edges. It's going to be one of those things that when you're not watching a Marvel or a Star Wars or something of that nature, that is going to require a movie time frame. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, let's watch something, and it's going to be family oriented. And like you said, this is for the whole family. I think I would agree with that, but I'm not sure it's going to appeal to everybody.
Right.
I mean, I guess, I'll have to see it to know, because it just seems a little bit like he's going to be a little bit silly talking about things I don't really care about. I don't know. We'll find out. But what I will say, though, about Disney Plus, because The World According to Jeff Goldblum is also a part of that, is with Star Wars, one thing I'm looking forward to, and the boys are just now like at the early stages of getting into Star Wars, where they're just now old enough and we can get into it together, is the Clone Wars. I want to watch with them, which I haven't seen yet, and I've wanted to watch it for years, but I kind of was like, well, I'm just going to wait for the boys, and I want to watch it with them, so it could be one of those things that we can like all do together and have that feel.
Experience for the first time together.
Exactly. The other side of it too is, do you think it's going to be set up in such a way that if you click on A New Hope, it's going to carry you in the order of the release of everything within the canon? That would be awesome, right?
Yeah.
If it just rolls into the next thing, almost like a series.
In 4 seconds, we will start Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly. And then it's like from A New Hope, you get into like the Clone Wars, and then you get into, whatever the order is of everything, right?
Well, they have...
That would be awesome.
They have spent painstaking amounts of time drawing a timeline of all of the shows in the canon of how they developed and how they're rolled out. And, Kathleen Kennedy came out, D23, and Ewan McGregor came out, and he was able to say that he will reprise his role as Obi-Wan Kenobi. So they're going to do another Obi-Wan Kenobi series. I think it's going to be on Disney Plus, and he's going to do something between the end of 3, Revenge of the Sith, and the beginning of New Hope. He's going to live in that Rogue One space.
Yeah.
And just to have Ewan McGregor be able to say that, who knows what it's going to be, but it's like there's all these missing connective pieces, and maybe the theater wasn't the place for the Solo movie. Maybe the theater wasn't necessarily the best venue for Rogue One. Maybe a streaming service in the quiet of your home, at your own pace, at your own discretion, when you get to choose, when a movie's released in the theater, you have a month roughly to go see it. And you're under a lot of pressure to see it, or you're going to go see it on home entertainment. But when it's released in that way, it kind of pushes you into this must-view space if we're going to talk about it in the zeitgeist of when people talk about things. But if you release it on a streaming service, we're talking about spoilers. I heard somebody talk about spoilers on some other platform. I forget what it was. And they were like, what's the statute of limitations on spoilers? Like, if it's on a streaming service, like, Netflix gets a season of a show that was on its original, you know, company a year ago. But because Netflix is such a bigger platform, they say you have to wait for a month after a season's released before you can freely, like, say a spoiler without saying spoiler alert. And I was like, it's such an arbitrary thing, but it kind of makes sense that this thing has been out for a year, but you have to wait another month because it finally hit the masses with Netflix, you know?
But Ted, I think we covered spoiler alerts last week with Little Women. When you're looking at 1895 or whenever that came out, or 1865 or something.
Exactly.
Last comment, and then I guess we can get into what we're watching.
Okay, cool.
It looks like the Mandalorian trailer is done in 2:35:1 aspect ratio.
Uh-huh.
Is that how Disney's going to be playing all these things? Like in a huge, widely, you know, so if you have a 16:9 television, are you going to have the bars again, like in the old days and stuff, or?
Yeah, I guess so. I think, you know, maybe they're in cahoots with Sony. Maybe this is how they're going to get Spider-Man back. They're going to say, Sony, make a bunch of 2:35 televisions and we'll help you sell them with Disney Plus having all 2:35 content.
I guess. I don't know. All right. What have you been watching the past week?
Oh, not much.
Not much.
Not much. I don't even know. Why don't you tell me what you've been watching? I'll think about what I was watching.
All right. So we finished Barry. Barry ended cool. Probably looking forward to the third season, I guess. But then we got into Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're a couple.
Is that heavy? Is that super heavy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
all of that HBO stuff is super heavy and dark.
Yeah. It what would you call that? Like a docuseries or something? Or how would you define it?
It's like a docufiction.
Yeah, something like that. it's really well done. I remember, I think I was a sophomore in high school when that all went down. And, you know, we were like, oh my God, the radiation clouds floating above us. And we were all freaking out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because we're about half, well, maybe a little less than halfway through. I think it's 5 episodes and we've seen 2. But it's, you see the difference between like communism and democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like communism functions with confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry. There's nothing to see here. There's no problem. It's under control.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we'll take care of you. No one's going to die and stuff. We're like, when you think about democracy, right? You come to the election. All people do is talk about how horrible our situation is. The world's ending. You know, elect me because the other guy is such a, you know, like he's so terrible at what
yes,
he does.
Yes.
You know, and both sides do it, right? Democrats, Republicans, both of them do it.
Right.
So, and the only way to get elected is to say how horrible it is and I have the fix. Whereas when you look at communism, and Gorbachev in The Thing makes the exact comment, our power is because of our perception of our power.
Mm.
Like it's a demonstration of how they fell apart, right?
Right.
They didn't have the money to have the safety precautions that the U.S. would put in place. They didn't have the economy to do a nuclear power plant in the proper way. They pretty much had a bare bones power plant that could.
They had to cut some corners.
Yeah, it could make nuclear energy for sure, but it also could melt down and explode.
Oh, no.
You know, yeah. So it's like this. It was more or less another. I don't know where the first step was, but it was definitely one of the major steps into their collapse only but a few years later.
Right.
And I think it's so far it's doing a good explanation of how communism is just like you look at socialism and that's like a social safety net. Maybe it's high taxes, but yet you gain a lot of benefit in medical insurance and good roads. roads and transportation, I don't know, whatever. But communism is all about like controlling the narrative.
Right, exactly.
Not letting misinformation out, even though the narrative is misinformation. You know, it's so like amazing, and it really lays it out well, I think. And you're watching it, you're like, man, they're letting the whole town sit in this cloud of whatever, because if they evacuate, then it's going to send a bad message to...
Hysteria, yeah.
Hysteria, whatever it is, right? So that's cool. Then we watched,
Before you move off of that... So I have not seen Chernobyl. I don't have HBO right now. I really want to get HBO because of the Barry, but I just spent $140 on something that we're going to get in 70 days.
So I don't know what
to do that. But my dental hygienist is Russian.
Okay.
And she was talking, you know, Chernobyl came out, and the last time I was in the chair, she was talking to me about when she was a child.
Does she pull teeth without Novocaine?
Only if I talk to her too much. But
right.
But she was talking about as a child how she was there and she was in the surrounding areas of Chernobyl.
Ugh.
And her family flew out of there and they had enough, you know, money and clout to get out, to self-evacuate basically.
For sure.
And like all of these friends, she had some other friends that weren't well off, but they were like, just take my children. So she ended up going with her, you know, some neighborhood kids that the family friends wanted to get their children to safety outside of this.
They show that in the show.
Is that people, right?
Yeah, they're in the hospital and the guy's like, just take her. Just take my kid, you know?
And it's so crazy that this actually happened, you know. But Chernobyl is half fiction, though, right? It's like fictionalized accounts of certain things that were historically true. So it's like historical fiction, or
yeah, I mean, it's that's why I say it's like a docuseries or whatever, because mm-hmm. when you have, you know, if you look at Saving Private Ryan, it's along that sort of a design where yes, the events are true to as they happened, but the
macro event. The macro event is it, but the thing we're focusing on is fiction.
For sure. Like the conversations that were had, we don't know what those were. So somebody had to write the dialogue, you know?
Right.
But we do know that these number of people went in to help shut off a valve.
Right.
You know, we don't know what their experience was down in the hole because they died.
Ah.
So, you know, it's like they dramatize, you know, the scene of the guys going in, and then it's like what you would have suspected would have happened, right?
Uh-huh.
When they all panic when the flashlights go out or something. You know, so it's like it's along the lines of like Saving Private Ryan with regard to the story is very true.
Right.
But each individual, we don't know, is that really the conversation? Is that really how they talked about it and so on? You know what I mean?
There are probably five conversations that happened like that, but nobody knows if that specific conversation happened.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, there's artistic license at some point.
Cool. All right. So what else you were watching?
And then the next one, another similar, on a similar note, First Man.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I saw that.
You did see that.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that was awesome.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Pardon the pun, but I think they captured the gravity of the weight that Armstrong felt being the first man to walk on the moon.
Oh, yes. Good dad joke. Good job.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and they also took one out of Kubrick's playbook.
Mm. Oh, when he did the real landing?
No. I mean, when they opened up the door and like they had sound, and then all of a sudden the vacuum of space eliminated all the sound.
Oh, right.
And then they went out into like the void.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was cool because like you watch Star Wars or Star Trek and there's all this like...
explosions. Yeah.
Noise in space, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there would be no noise in space. And like they opened the door and the air sucked out and then it was just silence.
Right.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And then we talk about artistic license. That has one of my favorite artistic license moments.
Ooh, do tell.
When he's standing at the Sea of Tranquility on the edge.
Oh, and throws in the...
And he throws in the little bracelet.
The bracelet?
When he throws in his dead daughter's bracelet, it's an amazing parental space to occupy. You know, it's just like you can't help but get lost in your head as a parent.
I was wondering how true that was. I didn't investigate. Like you said, Anne does all the investigating. I was going to leave that to her, but I wonder how true that is. It has to be true. Why would they, I don't know.
Well, I think it humanizes Neil Armstrong. And I don't know, as I looked into who he was as a man, he was very analytical. He was probably, like a high functioning on the spectrum of, autism, as a lot of, people that are highly specialized and do great things are.
For sure. Yeah.
But I think he might not have had that human connection necessarily to, maybe to people he did, but not to an object of a person who had passed away. And to be so far to, after knowing the calculations that went into achieving this goal at this time in history, to have him preoccupied with the thought of like, oh, I can't wait to get to the moon so I can throw this bracelet into space.
Right.
It was artistic license that hit all the right buttons, but it just hit me as like something that was out of character for the true man that is Neil Armstrong. It humanized Neil Armstrong to make the movie better.
Yeah. So in other words, it gave him more emotion than he probably had as a person.
Yes. And this is, again, another dig on Ryan Gosling, that he plays these characters that are meant to be less emotional. And then he has to kind of be this, a flatter actor, and he kind of has to act with a screen on his emotions.
Yeah.
But it's on purpose. It is a intended aspect of his acting abilities. So I don't know. I enjoy the movie wholeheartedly. I took offense to the people that said that he's kind of a flat actor, because I think that's intended that way. So I don't know. I like the movie a lot.
I love the color palette too.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it was totally 1960s grainy film. Like, you're there in the time, I mean, the color palette was really cool.
Yeah.
Anybody who's into photography and you do one of those Lightroom presets that gives it like Ektachrome 100, like color, like one of those.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I love that. The last comment I'd have, though, which is a bit of a concern, is how the movie was filmed and where it was filmed. I think it finally puts to rest the moon landing conspiracy, because they must have used the same soundstage, because I don't know how they got it as perfect as they did, other than they were on the same soundstage and that what the moon was, because since they're not filming on the moon, how do you replicate it?
Right. And when you said Kubrick, I thought that's what you meant, because Kubrick was the one who did the actual moon landing the first time around.
Yeah, no, I knew that.
Yes. Well,
okay, I see where you're getting at with that. No, mine was about like, there's no sound in space.
Right.
But you're right.
You were thinking Space Odyssey, and I was thinking how he supposedly filmed that first moon landing. I think that, so have you seen Apollo 11 yet? The documentary?
No, but so the funny thing is, let me just finish out what we've been watching.
Okay, sorry. Yes.
So in my head, I'm thinking that Apollo 11 was from Earth to the Moon.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So I said to Clarissa, I'm like, From Earth to the Moon is on HBO 2, thinking it's Apollo 11, that other documentary.
Right.
So I'm like, let's watch it with the boys.
Uh-huh.
They're going to love it, Because we covered Apollo 11.
Yes.
But anyway, I didn't realize that this is a Tom Hanks produced and like partially directed TV series from 1998. Right?
Yes.
But I'll tell you though, for a 21-year-old show, totally holds up.
Really?
I mean, it could have been done in 2019. It is that good.
Awesome.
I mean, it holds up solid. Sometimes you watch stuff from back then and, like 20 years ago, whatever, you're like, yeah, it's good for its day,
Right.
No way, man. This totally holds up.
You don't have to preface it. You don't have to say this was made 20 years ago. You just show it.
You know what? If you were to watch it today, you know what you'd say to yourself? They must have CGI'd a younger Tom Hanks onto the old Tom Hanks. Because, you know, he does like a monologue in the beginning. And, you know, I mean, 21 years ago, so he looks a lot younger.
Right.
Bryan Cranston plays Buzz Aldrin. You know, Fuchs, he's the mission control, like, head commander, head of mission control.
Right.
You know, like, tons of not quite popular actors yet, now popular actors, you know, because of the roles that they've played through over time. I mean, it is a solid series that if you didn't know any better, you'd think it's right now and you just would question, why do they all look so young? Like, it's done that well. I would say the last thing about it is, like, I'd recommend watching it if you haven't seen it. I never knew it was around. I want to see it.
What is it called again?
It's called From Earth to the Moon.
From Earth to the Moon. Okay.
Yeah, it's solid. The way they do the special effects with, like, the Mercury Gemini project and all that stuff, like, when they're doing their different floating around in space kind of stuff. It is so well done, you would never think it's over 20 years old. Apollo 11, though, you said you saw it with Bryce and stuff, huh?
We saw it in the theater. We saw it at the ArcLight, and it was amazing. And I think that put to rest the whole idea of, like, was this real? Was this fake? It is such a compelling documentary about that mission, that first man mission, that it's just so well done. So much original footage, you know, some of the best 70 millimeter footage from, you know, the space crawler, the launch pads and all that stuff. So
sounds amazing.
It is amazing. It's a great companion to the first man feature.
We'll have to watch.
Awesome.
Other than that, haven't seen much else. So First Man from Earth to the Moon, like I said, we just started that one, and we just started Chernobyl, so looking forward to Disney Plus and
that's
all
it.
The Star Wars and everything that comes with it. So there you go.
And the High School Musical, the musical, the series.
I don't even know what that is.
You're gonna see that. It's another Disney Plus thing. It's coming out, so we'll be watching that religiously over here at the house. So
we'll cover things next week.
But I did not watch anything. I tried to look and see what I had watched this week, and I have not watched anything this week. So I apologize. But that's that. I'm excited about. I think I might get Anne excited about Carnival Row. So we'll talk about that next week if we can watch one or two episodes.
All right, cool. Yeah, well, and I guess that's the main reason why we're trailer junkies and not movie junkies,
exactly.
Right? Because sometimes we don't watch things and we just get through trailers.
But I definitely watch tons of trailers, so more to come on that.
Cool. So really quick, how'd your beer finish up?
My beer finished nice. It was the last of that six-pack, so it is an amazing little 12-ouncer, but I'm about to head over to Frank and Barbara's to talk to them, to have a little afternoon, Labor Day afternoon visit. So we'll see what they have, what Frank has over there.
Nice, nice. Yeah. American Beauty finished out well. Not quite as bad as the end of the movie. But yeah, really smooth. So good I had two of them.
Nice.
Yeah, so. All right, Ted, hey, we'll get this cut together and we'll talk to you next week.
Awesome.
All right, man.
See you next week.
Later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.